Welcome to the Human Performance Podcast. Here we talk about everything to do with human performance and how leaders and organizations can get the best out of themselves and their people. I'm your host, Alex Young. My guest on the podcast this week is Alistair McCaw. Alistair is recognised as one of the world's leading figures in high performance, team culture and leadership. For over 25 years, he's worked with numerous world champion athletes, multiple Olympians and no less than 14 Grand Slam tennis champions. He also consults to various colleges and professional sports teams around the world. He's also the author of 5 best-selling books and a much sought-after keynote speaker. Alistair resides in South Florida. And on today's podcast, we talk about commonalities in the best performers, defining your purpose and how you make success, and the how and why to build a successful team culture. Hey, Alistair, welcome to the podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. Thanks. It's great to be here, Alex.
It's fantastic to have you on the podcast. We were just talking before we started recording about lots of interesting parts of your background, your books. But rather than me recap that in my own words, it'd be great if you could explain to the listeners what your journey has been to up to this point and what sort of inspired you to do the things you've done.
Gosh, well, I'm going to try to keep it pretty short because I'm sure nobody wants to hear this long-winded journey. But born in Northern Ireland, Belfast, Northern Ireland, actually in the same hospital as Rory McIlroy, the golfer. Left there when I was 5. It wasn't my choice, of course, at 5 years old. It was my parents' choice to immigrate to South Africa with me and my 3 brothers. Brought up in South Africa, which I was most grateful for. Great weather, a very sporty culture as well. So played a load of sports in school. That's where my love probably started. Always world championships and world cups in my backyard, in the back garden with my brothers. That would usually end up with tears. And of course, being the youngest, I would be the one that would get beat up. But I think later on, it's what made me a little bit tougher, developing grit and resilience. From a very young age, was working. We didn't get pocket money, so to say. So we would have to work for it, which was fantastic lessons from my parents. To be honest, I didn't realize it then. Of course, you see all the other kids getting pocket money and so on, and you're wondering why you're not. But from a young age, my parents taught us great life lessons. Earning your money. 10 years old, I was delivering newspapers. 14 years old, working in a hamburger takeout, flipping burgers. I did a whole lot of jobs, being a soft drinks mascot at supermarkets. You name it, I did it. And then my love for coaching and getting into the sports performance world started when I was around about 16, 17. I was cleaning the gyms after hours, the health clubs, so I could earn the money to pay for the subs each month to work out at the gym, so that could help my training. At that same time, I was just starting on the professional triathlon and duathlon circuit, which I had a really good career. I raced 5 world championships. My love for traveling started then. It was because of sport that I got to travel so much. I was 2-time national champion. A background, I would say my teenage years, my days were full. It was school, then it was sports until 6, 7 p.m. till the sun went down. I'd be working in the evenings, and this would continue. So that were my foundations, which when I look back at it and I think, how did I do it? How did I have the energy? But I just had such a fuel and such a drive to be a professional athlete at such a young age. And, in my book, Champion Minded, and Developing a Winning Attitude and Mindset as well, I talk about the foundations of having a vision, the importance of having purpose. And that's really something I had at a very young age that I didn't realize. When I look back at it now, I realize, wow, I had that. Nobody had to give it to me. My parents didn't have to tell me to go work out. My parents did have to tell me to study and learn, because that was the least of my favorite things, was to get my head into a book. And what's so funny, Alex, is that, here I am, I'm the author of of five books, and I failed school miserably. I failed English miserably. I couldn't stand to be in a classroom, and here I am writing books. So I'm sure if one of my English teachers from back in the day knew that I was an author, they'd probably fall over the back of their chair right now. So, but anyway, that's what good editors are for, right? So that's a little bit of my background. I'd say teenage years, early 20s, traveling. I raced for a lot of professional teams in Europe. Loved it, still love traveling to today. Then around about the age of 33, 34, after a good career working in sports performance, I got to work with the world number ones in tennis and squash and so many sports. I decided that I wanted to get it more into leadership, culture, mindset, which was always a passion of mine, and I'm still doing that today. So the business is growing, my passion keeps growing every day. I always said, you know, if you're not enjoying something, you're waking up in the morning and you don't like what you do, change it. And I have had those moments where I've had to change my direction slightly, not always easy, but it's always been worth it in the long run. So yeah, that's my journey, hopefully in under 3 minutes or so.
No, that's amazing. Absolutely nailed it. I mean, you've got such an amazing kind of record of, you know, both your own sporting achievements, the books, and then obviously having coached some absolutely incredible people. And I think I'm right in saying, you know, 14 Grand Slam tennis champions and multiple kind of Olympians in that as well. Obviously kind of coaching is something that I'm incredibly passionate about, both from, you know, my background sort of growing up with kind of sport, but then also going through my medical training and coaching other people in business and things like that. What was it that sort of drew you from you being your own sort of sports professional into coaching others? How did you make that transition?
It was something that came naturally for me. You know, today I'm in leadership and culture, and you know, I didn't realize it, but when, you know, I was in my early teenage years, I was always fascinated about leadership, you know, captaining a sports team, being a leader. So it must have been something that was in my DNA or my genetics that I wanted to be a leader, or I was interested in it. And little did I know that later on it would be part of my career or a massive part of my life is coaching, leadership, you know, working with other leaders and coaches. You know, I always say there's three stages in your career. Your first stage is you get paid for what you do. Your second stage is you get paid for what you know. And then your third stage is you get paid for who you grow. And I'm in that third stage now of, you know, which I love, is helping other leaders grow, helping other coaches grow, etc. So, you know, little did I know that from a very young age, my life in a way was being set up very, very early, you know, in my early teenage years of coach, being in the sports world, coaching, education, leadership, etc. Because to be honest with you, if you'd asked me the question, what do you want to do, when I was 15 or 16, I wouldn't have been able to tell you exactly. But my passion was always sports, leadership, team culture, mindset, etc. And you know, I feel sorry for a lot of young people these days. They're getting pushed into very early decisions of what they want to do. They go to a college or university to study something they don't really particularly like, but they've been pushed to make a choice. And you know, that's as we know, it's a lot of money. You know, a lot of students, especially here in the United States, are paying off student loans for the next 10, 15 years of their life. And that just isn't right, in my opinion. You know, that's another subject and another topic we can get into with regards to that situation. But I never went to college. I never furthered my education. I suppose I just got straight into work, got into, you know, traveling as a professional athlete. And that's, you know, that's how it turned out.
Well, I mean, amen to that. I mean, I think, you know, sports, you know, throughout your childhood and certainly when you're growing up, is just so, so important for developing some of those skills, like you mentioned, like leadership and, you know, teamwork and things like that. And I always think how fortunate I was growing up before I went to med school, that I, you know, was playing in lots and lots of sports teams across loads of different sports, solo sports, but also, you know, predominantly team-based sports, which just helped me to grow as a person. You know, around that time, was there anything else that you were sort of diving into in terms of books or anything like that? Or was it really, did you learn everything from sport around, you know, the things you mentioned like leadership?
Yeah, I was very one track minded in terms of when I was going for something, I would be all in. It would be everything. So, you know, right up until the age of my last race, which was the World Championships in 2002. Gosh, it's, you know, 20 years ago now. I was 100% committed in my lifestyle, never went to parties. I never had a drink of alcohol until I finished my career. And I'm talking, I never had a drop of alcohol until I was 33. I was so committed. I mean, my diet was, you know, just plain rice, chicken, pasta every single day. Bed, the right amount of sleep, all these things that, you know, I write about in Champion Minded, is the things that I did. And that was one of the inspirations behind writing Champion Minded. And I don't want to get too much talking about my books here or anything, but, you know, that was one of the inspirations to writing the book is hard work, the right attitude, effort, consistency, commitment, behavior, all these things. If you are consistent in them, you will be successful in whatever direction you take. So, you know, I didn't have the brains that someone like yourself had going to med school. I wish I did, but you know, we can all maximize what we have. That's the message at the end of the day, regardless if you have that or not, you know. Hard work eventually pays off.
100%. I think, you know, just extrapolating that forward from your time coaching people, you obviously worked with some just incredible athletes across, you know, many different sort of sporting categories. What were some of the sort of commonalities between like the highest performers that you worked with and coached?
Passion is one. Hunger to succeed. You've got to be hungry if you want to succeed. You know, you've got to want it badly. I wanted it badly. The athletes and successful people I've worked with, they want it badly. So that's a given. You can't give that to somebody either. That has to come from the person. A good work ethic is critical. You know, you can't get around the hard work. As I just spoke about there before, consistency, commitment is important. And then, of course, the ability, and this is something I see in young people. You know, I get asked a lot, you've worked with the best in the world. You've worked with juniors that have come through to be world champions and Olympians. What do you see in young people that are characteristics of excellence? And one of them is the ability to handle repetition, the ability to handle the boring, the ability to handle the monotonous, the ability to handle the everyday grind, if you want to call it that. You know, those are the qualities needed to succeed in any area, be it music, entertainment, whatever it is. If you're striving to be the best or to get to the top, you need those qualities. And again, those are things you can't give anybody. So, you know, maybe it was the background of me having grit and resilience at a very young age to get out, work early, you know, be beat up by my brothers. Not that I'm recommending that as a family tree to make your kids tougher, but all those small little things, you know, are critical to success. But I think the big one, Alex, is consistency. Can you do it today? Can you do it tomorrow and the next day and the next day and repeat for years on end? And you know, when you see the brilliance of a Ronaldo or a Messi or a Serena Williams or these, you know, these people, Tom Brady on TV, you don't see the hours and hours of that they're putting in, you know, behind the scenes. You know, I live very closely to Serena Williams. I live very closely here in Florida to most of the golfers, you know, Rory McIlroy, etc. And just you go behind the scenes and see what they're doing on a daily basis. It's still to this day of who they are. They're still putting in hours, hours upon hours.
You're listening to the Human Performance Podcast by Verti. If you're enjoying this episode, why not join our newsletter? When you sign up, you'll receive a copy of Level Up straight to your inbox every Thursday with the latest tips, tricks, and news about all things human performance. Head over to verti.com/newsletter to sign up. That's verti.com/newsletter. You can find this in the show notes. Anyway, back to the episode.
And I mean, when I was reading through, you know, your books, one of the things that kind of really, you know, struck me was the section you've got around, you know, making sacrifices and the things where you need to sort of, you know, defer your gratification. And you mentioned in your own training that, you know, you didn't drink alcohol, you know, you're eating the same food, weren't going to parties and things like that. How do you think people can sort of, you know, integrate that into their lifestyle in a way that is, you know, habitual and sustainable? Because, you know, for many people now, you know, growing up where they've got kind of YouTube, TikTok, all this stuff, there's so much external just stimulation that often it can be difficult to have that sort of stoic mindset and do those repetitive things. How would you sort of, you know, coach young athletes coming through at the moment, do you think?
Yeah, I think one of the key things is that you need monomaniacal focus in achieving, you know, excellence, whatever that might be for you, for example. And you know what? Absolutely, today there's more distraction than there ever was. I wasn't brought up with a mobile phone or a cell phone in my pocket, so I wasn't rushing in between practice or whatever to look to see what messages I had or to see what updates were on Instagram or TikTok and so on. So luckily I didn't have that distraction. I remember going out for long rides with a Walkman. Now that'll just tell you my age of, you know, people probably under 25 don't know what a Walkman is, a Sony Walkman, for example. And you'd be riding on the bike and, you know, do you remember the old earphones? You wouldn't, you know, all the wind would be coming through and you wouldn't hear anything. And that's what would keep me company. There was no podcasts back then. I wish there was. Otherwise, gosh, can you imagine listening to 3 hours of podcasts a day on the bike? I wouldn't have just been a great triathlete or cyclist, but also very, very smart as well. So, there's definitely more distraction today. But my advice would be set mini goals, set small goals on a daily basis, tick those off. You know, a reason why a lot of people fail in pursuing something or New Year's resolutions, you know, now that we're just into February, which means that statistically more than 70% of people have given up on their New Year's resolutions by the 31st of January, is because it's not realistic. It's idealistic. It's in terms of, it's not a real world. You know, I'm going to train. I'm going to go to the gym 7 days a week. I'm going to eat salads every night. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And, you know, after 4 or 5 days, that's gone. It's not sustainable. So set small daily goals for yourself that are achievable. Very achievable, because when you're achieving small daily goals, that's going to give you the motivation and the inspiration to want to do more. And when you want to do more, that's where success happens, is that it builds on that. There's momentum gained from achieving small daily goals. But I would say the biggest mistake most people make is they set their goals too big and they're unrealistic.
Yeah, great advice. I actually wrote an article in Entrepreneur Magazine probably about this time last year, you know, for something in the business world where it was all about if you get those micro wins and get those dopamine hits, you can start building stuff up. And that's really, you know, what gives you, you know, that enjoyment from being consistent, even if things, you know, can seem, you know, your overall goal or purpose can seem enormous. By breaking things down, it's just so, so important, I think, regardless of what you're doing. And, you know, for you...
Yeah, Alex, 100% there. Sorry to jump in there. You know, one of the big things in terms of you know, becoming better at whatever area, the particular area that is self-reflecting. And it's something I do every evening, is I self-reflect on the day I've had. And I ask myself three very simple questions. I ask myself, what did I do well today? What could I have done better today? And who did I make better today? Because the third question is very much linked to my purpose in life as well, is to impact as many people as possible. Something that, you know, I'm sure is a massive part of your life and purpose as well, because, you know, putting great material out there like you do on the Human podcast, on your podcast, for example, writing books, etc., writing articles, you're adding value to others. You're making an impact. So, you know, that's something that's massive to me as well, is self-reflecting.
But I mean, it's a fantastic point. And I think just being grateful for things as well. And we were, you know, just chatting before we started recording where, you know, you like me, I'm sure, sort of try and cram in loads of stuff around your day and are rushing around. And it's easy to kind of forget some of the, you know, the things that you do that do either impact others, especially if you're doing things like podcasts where you're sort of recording them in isolation and then you know, sending them out in you know, weeks in the future or something like that, that it is, you know, all these little things that people do consistently, and putting stuff out and sharing information is so helpful to people. And I think there's an element of just remembering to be kind of internally grateful for that. And, you know, like yourself, that's all the things that I do, which is kind of reflecting at the end of the day. And also thinking at the beginning of the day, you know, what can I do that's going to make me, at the end of the day, you know, super grateful, super kind of happy, super relaxed before I get into bed. And I think, again, just, you know, absolutely fantastic advice, not just for sports professionals, but for literally anybody. You know, whatever you're doing, you can sort of make that impact and then be grateful for it. And, you know, we've touched on sports and, you know, that sort of focus and purpose. But there's also an element that I know you're passionate about from your written work, which is around, you know, creating team cultures and environments in which kind of people can thrive, both in terms of, you know, sports teams, but also in terms of business and things like that. What sort of your take on building those winning cultures, which are just so important?
Well, first of all, I've been very, very fortunate to be able to visit a lot of great organizations, teams, corporates, etc., and been able to see why some team cultures succeed and why others don't. And I think at the end of the day, it all comes down to the people. It comes down to character, the quality of your people. Your people are your culture at the end of the day. You know, the people you use are more, I would say the people you use are more important than the systems you use. And don't get me wrong, systems, strategies, plans are very, very important to have in place, but it's the people at the end of the day that are running those plans. And, you know, there's nothing more important than the human element. You know, something I always, I have mentees that I help and always say, you can't invest enough in communication, you can't invest enough in relationships, and you can't invest enough in yourself. Those are three areas that are key in life, I believe, is proper communication, building relationships, and investing in yourself on a daily basis. But, you know, in winning cultures, when I talk about winning cultures, I'm not talking about standing on top of the podium. I'm talking about cultures where you love to go and work, cultures where you love being in that environment, culture where there's a fantastic experience. You know, if you were to describe, another word for describing culture is experience. What experience are you having here at our company, at our team? That is what culture comes down to. And, you know, it can be a buzzword, and it's something very interesting, Alex, when I walk into a room and, you know, be it in a college or a sports team or corporate and ask, what is the definition of culture? And it's incredible how many different answers you'll get. And it's almost something like I see as Brexit. Is not many people have heard of it, but don't quite know exactly what it is. I think in all honesty, and we're not going to get all political here, even those who are in charge of Brexit don't quite understand it either. But culture is one of those things that you know, people are not quite sure exactly what it is. They'll give you different answers. And culture comes down simply to your beliefs, which drive your behaviors, which drive your outcomes. That's really what it comes down to, if you want to break down culture. But at the end of the day, it's people. You can't have a winning culture without winning mindsets and the right people. There's just no chance in that. And then, of course, it takes a long time to build a great culture with the right people as well. You know, we look at sports teams, we look at examples of Jurgen Klopp rebuilding Liverpool again. That's been at least a five-year project as well, of getting the wrong people off the bus, getting the right people on the bus, getting them in the right seats, the right roles, proper expectations, driving the right standards, all these things. I mean, there's just so much that goes into it. And let me tell you, building a great culture is never easy. And it's not just a handbook either. It's actually more actions and behaviors on a daily basis.
And I think, you know, the phrase you used there, which is not just culture, but building a winning culture specifically is, you know, particularly challenging to do because, again, as you say, the behaviors and the, you know, the regular communications that you have with your team, they need to be aligned to that overall purpose, that overall mission of the team. And in sports, it's winning, you know, in business, it might be sort of growing revenue or, you know, winning in another sort of way. Do you have any kind of, you know, tips and, for, you know, from your experience of kind of coaching people around how to kind of align people to that winning mission specifically?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, you one of the first questions I ask leaders are, you know, what does a winning culture look like to you? And, you know, you've got to describe what that looks like. You know, what do the behaviors look like? What does it look like on a daily basis? What does the environment look like, et cetera? So it's important to have a clear picture and clear vision of what a winning culture looks like, first of all. And then once you get those traits or keywords, let's just say it, of what a winning culture looks like, is what do we have to do to achieve those on a daily basis, for example. So it's, you know, you have to define what it looks like. You have to be clear on what it looks like. There has to be clarity in the vision. There has to be clarity in all that you're doing. And you'll be amazed as well as when I go into organizations and teams and ask team members what their vision is, what their goals are, more than 50% can't tell you. The leaders, they know them, and they're pretty sure that everybody else knows them, but when in fact more than 50% of the team members don't know them. Now, there's where your first problem starts already. When there's not clarity in the vision, there's not clarity in the goals, there's poor communication, expectations, all these things. These are things that can derail a great culture, for example. So, you know, it's definition, first of all, clarity is important of what you want to achieve. And then, again, getting back to what we spoke about is finding the right people to be able to achieve those goals. And, you know, a great team culture is not just a sometimes thing. It's an all the time thing. It's an everyday thing. And it's everybody's involved. It's not just the leaders that are driving the culture. It's the team members that are driving the culture. You know, great teams are where team members can have open and honest conversations, can have the hard conversations. And that's an area I go into if anybody's listened to my podcast or read books or whatever, is dealing with the hard conversations, the difficult conversations, the things that are not so nice. You know, to be an effective leader, you have to have the ability to handle the hard and difficult conversations.
Really interesting. And I think it's in Champion Minded, which I was saying before we started recording again, I just sort of got through that book like so quickly because it was just so interesting and so well kind of structured and put together. But, you know, one of the key things that you say in that book is, you know, despite best intentions, despite, you know, your habit, despite great training and talent and things like that, there are always going to be kind of ups and downs. You're not going to win every single time. What are your thoughts on kind of the mindset there for sort of high performing athletes who obviously, or in fact, you know, high performing salespeople or anyone in business who, they're putting in the work, they're following all the instruction, but for whatever reason, they might not win. How should they respond to that? And how can they get back on a winning track?
Yeah, that's where it comes down to the right recruitment of the right people, getting back to having people that have, that are solution minded, that have grit, that have resilience. And that's something I help college coaches when they're recruiting athletes to scholarships. You know, there's a lot of money involved here. A scholarship to a big school here in the United States is $250,000 a year. For 4 years, sorry. That's a lot of money. Now, if you're making mistakes in terms of getting the right recruitment or hiring the right people, that's a lot of money that's being wasted there. So, you know, finding the right people is key. Also, understand that there's no perfect culture. So when it comes to teams, organizations, etc., there is no perfect culture. There's going to be attacks and there's going to be challenges even in great cultures. But what makes cultures great is that they have people that are, again, able to have open and honest conversations, able to have the hard conversations quickly. Things aren't swept under the rug. That's where majority of the problems happen in cultures, failing cultures. Conversations aren't being had that have to be had. Leaders aren't doing their job in terms of enforcing and endorsing standards on a daily basis. Now, getting back to the individual point in that is that, you know, life is a marathon. There's going to be moments where you'll feel good. There's moments where you don't feel good. And listen, I'm the same. I might write books on motivation and positivity and being champion-minded and that, but especially in the last 2 years, there's been days where I didn't want to get out of bed. There's days where I didn't feel motivated. There's days where I've been very negative with myself as well. And some people might be surprised to hear that. Oh, you know, here's the author of Developing a Winning Attitude and Mindset. Well, I'm very proud that I can admit that I'm just like everybody else. I have negative thoughts. I will shout at the car that's in front of me in traffic and then, you know, feel, oh, Alistair, you know why? You know, what's that going to help? And I'll say to myself, that's taking another day off your life. You know, I know it sounds pretty dramatic, but, you know, we're all human at the end of the day. You know, the difference between being a negative and positive person comes down to how quickly you can get rid of negative thoughts. That's what it really comes down to, is we all get negative, but how quickly can you move on from that negative thought? And the first step there, the first step to being a positive person is self-awareness. Is catching yourself being negative or catching yourself with that unhelpful thought, that negative thought, and changing it with something positive. That is the first step in becoming a more positive person, is self-awareness.
Again, just absolutely fantastic advice. And I think, you know, I'd second that. I'm always very guilty of, you know, myself trying to be a high performer. And then you start stressing about things which are, you know, probably like over optimizations or, you know, just making yourself unhappy or frustrated for no real reason. And I think you're absolutely right. You know, catching yourself, checking yourself. And again, that attitude of sort of being grateful for things can really help to sort of align things at the end of the day, certainly from my experience.
Yeah. You know, we cause a lot of anxiety in our lives and unhappiness by always pursuing something. And I can talk from experience here is, you know, you write one book, then, well, let's write two books. Okay, I write four books. Let's write five books. Okay, I run the marathon. Okay, I need to run another marathon to feel even better about myself. And there's nothing wrong with pursuing excellence and so on. But, you know, at the end of the day, is it making you happy? And I think a key thing is that sometimes always looking, you know, they always say, always look in front of you. And I disagree with that. You know, yes, have goals, have a vision, but be present in the moment, be happy where you are, be grateful with what you have. There's probably the majority of the world would be happy to have what you have, more happy than you. So that's something to remember of. And then, you know, don't just look forward, but look backwards. And be proud of how far you've come. Be proud of the obstacles and challenges that you've overcome. That's a big area where I get my confidence from. That's a big area where I build my self-image from, is looking back on the things that I'm proud of and the achievements I've overcome and obstacles I've overcome and my journey. We all have a unique journey. And there might be things in your past you're not proud of, and there might be things in your past that you regret and you could have done better. Hey, own it. It's part of your journey. It's made you who you are today, your unique self. Be proud of that and draw on the things from the past that have made you stronger, that have built your confidence, your self-image, and own it.
Again, just, you know, fantastic advice for anybody listening. And I think it's, you know, so, so important in, you know, the current environment where like a lot of people are now getting back to offices, but were previously kind of trapped at home and they might be sort of overthinking things or stressing about things. And, you know, that kind of like alignment and catching yourself if you're in your head or thinking negatively, whether you're a sports professional, you know, where some of your meets or competitions might have been cancelled over the last kind of 18 to 24 months because of the pandemic, or whether you are, you know, working from home, it's the same kind of, you know, problem that people have been facing, which is, you know, again, rectified by being sort of grateful and by sort of catching that negative self-talk and doing a bit of self-coaching, basically.
You know, Alex, I'm glad you brought that up and said that, because whatever stage of COVID, post-COVID, post-Omicron, whatever stage we're in, maybe by the time, you know, this episode is out, there could be another variant. And I'm talking about a week, a month, a year. We just don't know. But you know, it's still important to understand that we're all going through this. And I know that sounds very cliche, but even myself, I've had a challenging last 2 years. It's not been easy. There's been good days, there's been bad days, and that's okay. Again, I just spoke about owning it. I've owned my bad days. I've owned my days where I've stayed in bed until 10 a.m. in the morning, which is so uncharacteristic, not me. You know, I'm a guy that's an early riser and morning routine and so on. Well, you know what? There were some mornings I just couldn't get it done. And, you know, I'm glad I've had those experiences, but please, we're not out of this. Even if we were out of this, you know, we still struggle with the same things: loneliness, isolation, unhappiness at work, unhappiness in our relationships, so on and so forth. So, you know, we're always dealing with something. I've never met one person in my life who doesn't have problems or doesn't have challenges. It's impossible. But I think when you learn or get to know what some other people's problems or challenges is, you might just keep your own.
Right, 100%. And I think, yeah, getting back to what we started off the conversation by discussing, which was around, you know, purpose and finding, you know, what success kind of means to you on an individual level. Obviously, you know, you've written a book, you know, entitled kind of like Lead with Purpose, and you've kind of broken down 44 individual ways to kind of lead. What's your kind of take on, you know, leadership for leaders, whether it's in business or leaders in sports teams, and how they can sort of bring a lot of these things together for their people and their teams?
Yeah, I think, again, getting back to communication and relationships, it was a key thing. And one thing I observed over the last 2 years with organizations and corporates and teams and so on is the ones that succeeded, the ones that got through this and thrived, not just survived, already had built up a good culture and built up good relationships, were during this period of isolation, being at home, being, you know, having meetings over Zoom or Microsoft or whatever platforms they were using, they came out of it better, so to say. They thrived. Companies and organizations who hired people of character and positive attitudes thrived more. So there's going to be some very interesting studies that come out of this, I'm sure. Already there's books being written on what they've seen in the first year of COVID, so on and so forth. I've read one or two, like Working from Home and so on and so forth. I can't remember the exact titles of two or three of the books that were written pretty much during COVID. But, you know, that's where we've been able to, it's exposed leadership as well, is, you know, a crisis exposes the quality of the leader as well, of how they handle it. And the leaders who failed didn't communicate well. There was lies told. We know that's still going on as well. We're not going to get into politics, I promised anybody. And that's around the world, not just some particular places. And the leaders that thrived were transparent, were honest, admitted that they didn't have all the answers. And that, you know, those are lessons in leadership. But yeah, I believe it was too late in a way to all of a sudden, once a crisis hits now, to all of a sudden have a better culture. Why? Because already trust has been formed or lost. Relationships have been formed or lost. So yeah, it was key, absolutely key.
And as we sort of, you know, start to wind things up, you know, one of the questions that I sort of ask everyone on the Human Performance Podcast is who your human performance hero is. And we were sort of joking at the top of the podcast that, you know, you've written about, you know, something similar, name your, you know, top three kind of inspirational leaders in one of your books. And then when you were asked about it, you couldn't quite pull people out. So, you know, now we've been, you know, chatting for about sort of 30 minutes or so. Have you had a think about who that might be, who sort of inspired you on your journey?
It's pretty easy to go to a sports person, you know, someone that you've admired, you know, growing up, or even someone that, you know, you know, I've had the privilege to be on the same tennis court as Rafael Nadal and Roger Federer and these people, where we've practiced with them in Abu Dhabi and Dubai and Wimbledon and so on and so forth, when I've worked with pro players. But it's easy to go there. And by the way, those two names I mentioned, just fantastic human beings, really. I've seen them or been around them quite often. But I'd have to go to my mom, someone that's still a rock in my life. I'm thankful. You know, someone that was tough on me growing up, but very, very fair always. There was always love there. And, you know, putting up with four boys and everything else that was going on around her. So I'd have to say for sure, she's my hero. Always there. And I know that might sound cliche. It's easy to maybe go to a family member as well. But, you know, there's so many people on my journey that have influenced me, that have changed my thinking in some way or another. But, you know, I would say I'd have to go with my mom. And listen, my dad, a fantastic man as well. They just celebrated their 55th anniversary in December, wedding anniversary. and still just an example of love, of everything you'd want in parents. So I've been very, very blessed and very, very lucky.
Fantastic examples. And just before we sort of you know, share socials and let everyone know how they, you know, can find out a little bit more about you, one question you know, just popped into my head was, obviously you've worked with some just incredible athletes and amazing people throughout your career. Have you got any kind of, you know, standout examples or you know, specific events where you've sort of been involved in it? Maybe it's a, you know, a match that sort of springs to mind, or you know, some coaching that you have done that's been, you know, very, very rewarding, or anything that kind of jumps out.
Gosh, you know, for me, Alex, I've always admired people that have made it to a very, very high level, or if you want to call them famous, but they still have a lot of humility, they're still humble. You wouldn't know they were a famous person if they walked into the room, for example. I've always had a massive admiration for that, because I've seen a lot of ego around high performance arenas, especially in sports. But I still look at a guy like Nadal or Federer, where we have no idea what it's like to walk in their shoes in a day. I mean, you can't go to the supermarket, you can't walk down the street, you can't put gas in your car. And then even when you're around a sports event, you know, you're just, everybody wants a photo with you and so on. But being around those two guys, I've never seen them decline a photo or be, you know, in a bad mood about it or whatever. They always have time for everybody. I remember sitting in the players' lounge, and it was funny. I was chatting to Rory McIlroy. I was in Rome, Italy, and we were chatting in the players' lounge there, and Federer came past. And there was a woman at the coffee machine. Now, of course, when you're in Rome, Italy, the coffee's great. And one of the sponsors of the tournaments is a coffee brand. I can't remember who it was. And she was struggling with changing the pods in the coffee machine. And Federer came past and stopped and started to help this lady, showing her how to change the pods of the coffee. And I remember looking at this lady's face, so just like shock. I mean, I think she went gray. And he's like showing her, well, you have to take this pod out, and then you take the back thing out, you fill it up with water, you put it in your hair, just casually showing her how the coffee machine works, helps her and goes, okay, and goes on his way. And I think she was still like frozen for the next minute or so. But there's an example of just, you know, someone that's one of the most famous figures in the world, but still so humble and has the humility to stop and help someone he doesn't know. And I know that's a very small example, but when I see stuff like that, I remember that more than great matches. I remember that more than great events. It's more just, I suppose, kindness and human actions like that are very impressionable on me.
Well, that's a great way to wrap things up, because this is obviously the Human Performance Podcast. So those kind of human factors are just like so important, I think, in every walk of life. And Alistair, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you. I think, you know, we've covered so many things that I am just obsessed with, and I think, you know, are just so, so interesting for anybody. If people do want to find out a little bit more about you or pick up one of your books or anything like that, where is the best place for them to go?
Yeah, sure. I'm very active on Twitter at Alistair McCall. Instagram, Be Champion Minded. My books are all available on Amazon worldwide. And of course, I have my podcast, the Alistair McCall Podcast, as well. So those are probably the best places.
Amazing. Well, this has been an absolute pleasure, and hopefully catch you very, very soon.
Thanks so much, Alex. It's been a pleasure.